Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noll Show. And now, your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about the latest in health and healing. Have a lot of new information to share with you there. And then we're going to also talk about the world we live in and how it's going towards artificial intelligence. And most people think that's a good thing. Why not? But there's side effects. There's problems. There is a social pathology that we're not looking at, and we should. And I'm going to play some important audio clips from Pro. These people really support it, up to their eyeballs, and they think it's just a cat's meow. Well, maybe it is, but what happens if the artificial intelligence becomes more important in decision-making? In effect, it has its own mind. It does what it wants and therefore bypasses us. So we're going to deal with all these issues today, and then I'm going to save room for a commentary about why, before we do anything more to supposedly improve our lives, and that's what they're trying to emphasize, that it's going to improve our life, that maybe we should ask ourselves, okay, let's go back and take a look. You've made all these promises in these other areas. How did that help us? Well, that's what we're going to look at. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. And the first thing up is how physical exercise aids in stroke recoveries. And this is from a major university, the George August University in Germany. And they talk about the after effects of a stroke. And by the way, if you know anyone who's had a stroke, those can be life-changing. Paralysis, speech problems, memory loss, those all occur in varying degrees of severity and depending upon the location and the amount of brain tissue damage. How far a stroke patient can recover is largely determined by the ability of the brain to reorganize itself. And understanding what can improve this ability is therefore essential in developing the best therapies for rehabilitation. I remember when a close friend of mine, and a little backstory to this, because sometimes it's in the side notes and backstories that we understand a content we wouldn't have appreciated and a context that is left out. Generally, person had a stroke. Oh, my goodness, they were healthy, and then they had a stroke. No, you're not healthy and have a stroke. You have an unrecognized, undiagnosed pathology that builds. Generally, it's a clot, and that clog can be a clot that leads to the ischemic episode in the brain or in the heart. Could have been building for years. Sometimes people say, oh, I just got this surprising diagnosis. I've got 95% occlusion, meaning blockage, in my artery going to the brain. Okay, that probably took 30 to 40 years to block. And that's what all those fats and sugars in the diets have done. That's what alcohol does, even in moderation. And then you have the epithelium, the lining of the tissue. And I give a very simple analysis of this. Visualize a hose, brand new. It's pliable, it's easy to use, and then let it sit in the sun for 2 years. It's stiff as a board, and it cracks. That's what happens to your arteries when we don't pay attention to them. They become stiff, and then they get damaged, and little lesions, little scabs form inside the epithelium, and then those can break off and be the basis of a clot, or they narrow, the narrowing of the arteries, and that forces your blood pressure up. And it also means that clotting material can also break loose, and that causes a heart attack. So just doing one thing, exercising, is not enough. And yet, historically, we're monotheistic in how we live. There are exceptions, of course, but most people are very ritualized. Well, if it's Monday, here's what I'm going to wash first when I get in the shower, under the armpits and in the face. And it'll be the same every single day. It's a personal ritual. And how we answer the phone, whether we answer it, hi, or yes. And it becomes ritualized. Doesn't matter who's calling. Then later, if you go, yes, oh, this is your mother. Oh, hi, Mom. then you lighten up. But otherwise, we become unconscious of these. We just go through the motions, and that's not healthy. So when our diet is there, as long as, well, I went to the gym. I go to the gym 3 days a week religiously, and I work out for a half hour. What do you do? Well, I'm on that bicycle. I do spinning. But that's not real resistance. And that's not hitting all the different muscle groups. And that's not helping your lungs or your heart as you would if you went out and did nonstop power walking at a fast pace or jogging or swimming. But they got in their mind, they're doing their thing. Now, I put that as backstory because the woman who had this stroke, and many of you know her because she had her own radio show on the Progressive Radio Network, and I got her to do her first marathon, the San Francisco Marathon, and I paced with her throughout the race. I didn't do my own race because I promised her that I would stick with her through the whole race, and she ended up winning the gold medal. And after that, she got into it. But she never changed her diet. Her diet remained the same. And I said to her once, I said, look, you think you're healthy because you're trim and you're strong. You can, you know, dance all night or you can power walk for a long distance. But that is only one piece of the puzzle. You're not taking any supplements. You're not taking vitamin E. You're not taking coenzyme Q10, which can protect your heart. You're not taking cayenne or L-carnitine. You're not taking ginkgo or hawthorn. These are nutrients that will protect your heart and your arteries, prevent a stroke. And her comment was, well, several of my friends are physicians. One's a cardiologist and said that I'm the healthiest person that they have ever met. I said, well, then you don't want to change. That's fine. But remember, you're living in illusion. Jump forward and the day that she had her stroke. And so I went over to the hospital and I sat with her and I said, I'm happy to help you regain your health. And I did a whole protocol. She did none of it. Zero. And it took her a long time. Long time to where she could walk and get her speech back. And on several occasions I said, why aren't you doing a more holistic protocol? Well, my doctor this, my doctor that. And sure enough, she didn't change. And about, I think it was 6 years later, she's with her partner, and they're in a restaurant in some deli, I was told, and she's eating bad food, and suddenly she says, oh, and boom. Then she has another stroke, and from that she dies. I had a lot of friends have strokes and die. And so when you're helping people and you're seeing the side effects of this, it isn't good. But that's reality. So I want you to pay attention when you're exercising. Exercise can make a difference. It can make a huge difference. But we have to actually engage it. We have to do it daily. But we also have to pay attention. Keep your blood thin. How do you do that? Green juices. Celery, green apple, chlorophyll, spirulina, wheatgrass, all of your greens thin the blood. Vitamin E thins the blood. Vitamin C. If you were to take vitamin C every 2 hours or every 3 hours a day, 1,000, 2,000 milligrams, that is a great way to prevent a stroke or a heart attack. If you took coenzyme Q10 three times a day, that's also a way of keeping the heart oxygenated. And if for any reason you have a stroke, always have on you a living will that says that you demand hyperbaric oxygen therapy, even if you're in a coma, even if you're unconscious, because hyperbaric oxygen therapy right after a stroke is the one thing we absolutely know can stop a lot of that brain damage and actually reverse it. Now, once you're in recovery, once you're out of the hospital, then we can do stem cell therapy using your own body's stem cells and infusing them back into your body and getting your brain rebuilt. And there are nutrients that rebuild the brain. And I did a whole webinar on rebuilding the brain. So we can do that. But please remember, it all starts when you're able to exercise daily. That's why it's saying here physical exercise aids in stroke recovery. And that's what their study found. This was published in Frontiers in Aging Neuroscience, the positive effects of exercising. But I suggest exercising 6 days a week, not a short time, and do it with vigor. I mean, really let out all the stops and push it hard. And also, all the time, people say, I'm healthy when I'm sitting with them. And okay, good. Glad to hear that. Yeah, I don't know why I have this problem. And so you say you're healthy. What's your diet? And they tell me their diet. It's not a healthy diet. And then I say, are you on any medication? And almost everyone that I counsel is on multiple medications. And now I'm seeing more and more people on psychiatric drugs. There was an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association Network Journals of Internal Medicine, and it said that, quote, one in six adults in the United States reported taking psychiatric drugs at least once during a recent year. And then it goes into detail about this. And a lot of people are taking a lot of drugs. 20.8% of white adults reported use of psychiatric drugs, compared to 8.7% of Hispanics and 9.7% of blacks and 4.8% of Asians. Now, look at that. We are almost 500% more likely, if we're a white Caucasian adult, to take a psychiatric medication than an Asian. Why not? Why aren't they right up there with us? Well, could it be that they have a different view of dealing with life issues? And a part of their upbringing is to understand their transitions in life. And as you go through these transitions, some of these transitions may be challenging. But it doesn't mean you have something wrong with your brain. It doesn't mean the psychiatric drug is going to change it. To the contrary, what we're finding now, and all these soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria and other countries, like including Yemen, is that they're suffering from the effects of the psychiatric meds they were put on to deal with the stress and anxiety of war. And the side effect frequently is suicide. So guess which group is committing massive suicide? About 23 people per day taking their own lives, ex-soldiers. And we're giving the cause of death as post-traumatic stress disorder instead of side effect of the medication. No one should be taking psychiatric meds, children in particular. I consider it abhorrent that any pediatrician would give a child a psychiatric medication. And they're giving even six-month-old babies psychiatric medications because of bipolar, because the baby laughs and cries. Every baby in the world laughs and cries. Anything to sell a drug and anything to make extra money and be compliant. It takes a unique kind of person to say, no, the entirety of my profession is wrong, and stand for the truth and defend those children. So don't take the drugs, and you can't just stop them. You have to detoxify and wean yourself off, but there you can get off of them. Also, seaweed could hold the key to environmentally friendly sunscreens. This is from King's College London. A compound found in seaweed could protect human skin from the damaging impact of the sun without causing harm to marine ecosystems. That is the latest thing there, so it's good to see that something good's coming. We're going to take a brief break, and then I'm going to come back and talk about Tel Aviv University hyperbaric oxygen therapy. We're trying to reconnect with my computer, so back in a moment. Please stay with us. University, really exciting study, a new Tel Aviv University study reveals that hyperbaric oxygen treatment, what I was just talking about, may ameliorate symptoms experienced by patients with Alzheimer's disease. Quote from the study, This revolutionary treatment for Alzheimer's disease uses hyperbaric oxygen chamber, which has been shown in the past to be extremely effective in treating wounds that were slow to heal. We have now shown for the first time that hyperbaric oxygen therapy can actually improve the pathology of Alzheimer's disease and correct behavioral deficits associated with the disease. This research is extremely exciting as it explores a new therapy that holds promise as a treatment for Alzheimer's disease, says Professor Ashri. Well, Professor Ashri, it's not the first time. Dr. Perlman was working on this. Dr. Calliope was doing this. There have many people in the United States. Perlmutter in Naples, Florida was doing it. I interviewed him, filmed him with four chambers down there, and very nice chambers. You go in and you lie down, or not, don't, you don't go clear down, but you're in a comfortable chair and with your legs up and you're reading. You can listen to music, you can watch television, and you get an hour's therapy. And people with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, ALS, they all can benefit from this. But it's nice to see this. And by the way, stroke recovery, even 5 years after a stroke, you could still benefit those parts of the brain that have been damaged. So that's the latest on health and healing. Everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. I like to present some human interest stories in our format here. And we're going to begin with just a brief overview of where we stand when it comes to medical marijuana. First, many states have now passed legislation, and this really is a state's issue, to allow medical marijuana or even recreational marijuana. Now, that's what the state citizens want. That's what their legislators and governors have signed into law. From my perspective, I simply look at what does the scientific literature show. And the scientific literature shows, the official government scientific literature, the Library of Medicine, where the doctors in America go to see what is acceptable and not acceptable as far as current medical scientific standard practice. 22,000 studies, I repeat, 22,000 studies on the topic of marijuana. And many of those are based upon how powerful it is. Now, it's not the smoking of the marijuana. It's the actual chemical, the cannabinoids that they have extracted, which do not do anything as far as the euphoric state that you can get in by smoking it. But this is what happens when autism is the case and you're trying to help a kid that's got seizures and brain abnormalities. It helps. With brain tumors, it helps. With lung cancer, including end stage, it helps. So you have an enormous amount of good quality science showing that it's very beneficial. In fact, there's a whole history to this that goes back a long time, and we really have to go back and say, how was it that something was so powerful for so many years, and suddenly it ceased to exist? It was no longer legal. And that had nothing to do with the fact that it was causing people to go insane and want to commit crimes. That was the public relations campaign that made it seem like you would inhale and go into reefer madness. That was pure public relations. And who was behind it? Who benefited? The alcohol industry benefited. The pharmaceutical industry benefits. And by the way, the pharmaceutical industry has now patented the medically active ingredients in cannabis. And by the way, both sides are now firing back, both the Republican and the Democratic side, against Jeff Sessions' war on marijuana. But that doesn't deter him because he is one of these fundamentalistic true believers. He is the ultra-Orthodox in his field, which is a bad place to be. But again, we have to go back to the real history of marijuana, and that's where you see that it was all about the competition, because hemp was a very, very important agricultural ingredient. You can make rope from it. In fact, that's how we used to make hemp ropes. And but there was a man named Henry Aslinger. And Henry Aslinger, A-N-S-L-I-N-G-E-R, was the head of the DEA from 1930 to 1962. Quote, most marijuana smokers are Negroes, Hispanics, and jazz musicians and entertainers. Their satanic music is driven by marijuana, and marijuana smoking by white women makes them want to seek sexual relations with Negroes, entertainers, and others. It is a drug that causes insanity, criminality, and death, the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind, end quote. That's his actual statements. And so the entire system is based upon racism, misogyny, and this institutional racism, which is our drug war. Now, pull back even further. So once you ask how many people die, how many people smoke marijuana and then go out and commit crimes, the answer is nobody. But then look at pharmaceutical drugs that are completely acceptable, and look at alcohol, acceptable. Look at cigarette smoking, which is acceptable. It's not illegal. No one is suggesting anybody ban it. Just put warnings up, and you have massive amounts of death and injury from liver cancer and sclerosis of the liver and stomach cancer and kidney disease and brain abnormalities from alcohol use and emphysema from smoking, and all forms of iatrogenic medically induced death and illness from taking over-the-counter prescription medications. So on the one hand, we have an enormous multi-hundreds of billions of dollar a year industry that does nothing but have death and disease as its side effects or primary effects. There's no study that shows you by smoking cigarettes you're healthier. Or you can take chemotherapy and prevent cancer. You can take statins and prevent heart disease. Or you can take non-steroidal anti-inflammatories and prevent pain. Or you can take Prozac or Zoloft or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors and prevent psychiatric disorders. And yet, on the other side, the cannabinoids are known to prevent cancers from mutating. They're known to help with brain chemistry. So it's all political and economic. And that's why it's stupid. And the war on drugs is stupid. All we do is we support the different groups, like the one cartel in Mexico. We supported them through Fast and Furious. We actually gave them weapons that they used. So they were killing people, beheading people, just like ISIS. And that was considered acceptable because they, in turn, were our informers, and they told the Department of Justice and DEA about the other six drug cartels. What if we just outlawed all of this and said there's no more arresting people for drug use or selling drugs, and make it legal, as other countries have, with phenomenally positive results? But we won't do that because you got to follow the pattern, follow the money, and once you create an agency, it becomes a nonstop growing agency. And nobody looks at the results. The results are abysmal. So here's what Stephen Colbert had to say on this topic the other night.
We've got some bad news for people who partake of the sweet, sweet green stuff. Of course, I'm talking about the money states are making off legal marijuana. Because today, their buzz was shackled by Attorney General and gnome on your blacklight poster who's going to narc on you, Jeff Sessions. Today, Sessions rescinded an Obama-era policy that paved the way for legalized marijuana to flourish. My roommate in college made it flourish with a lamp in the closet. But come on, Jeff, you're the state's rights guy. Would it help you if they smoked the weed out of a rolled-up Confederate flag? This new directive from Sessions can mean only one thing. He still doesn't know that white people smoke pot, too. We can't expose our delicate young ladies to the jazz man's reefer stick. I said, good day, sir. Beauregard, bring the horses around. I'm paraphrasing, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, states who have legalized pot are surprisingly mellow about this news. In fact, the U.S. attorney in Colorado says there will be no change to marijuana enforcement despite Sessions' shift on pot policy. Wait a second. Pot just got recriminalized and smokers are less paranoid? What's next? They've had enough Little Debbie Swiss cakes? But the Republicans' opponents aren't taking this sitting down in the couch on the basement. Like independent senator and man watching a dog play electric guitar, Bernie Sanders. Sanders was critical of treating pot smokers as criminals, saying, "Marijuana isn't heroin." It's true. Marijuana is not heroin. And for the record, Senator Sanders, a spoon is not a comb. But, come on.
Not a
Come on, Sessions knows marijuana isn't heroin because he's on record saying marijuana is only slightly less awful than heroin. It's true. They're very close. You take heroin, you die. Smoke marijuana, you will die laughing at Jeff Sessions. But who knows? Who knows if this will even last, because a 12-year-old Colorado girl who takes medical marijuana for seizures is already suing Jeff Sessions and the DEA. And Mr. Sessions, oh, Mr. Sessions, you do not want to mess with a 12-year-old girl. She's probably twice your height. And she's on the demon weed. Watch out! We'll be right back with noted pot opponent Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. Wow, what a cliffhanger. What's gonna happen in the next Late Show video? Click subscribe to find out.
That's his perspective, and you could agree or disagree with it. He uses irony in his comedy, but I think he's spot on. And now here's an audio clip. Let me set it up because you can't see it. What you have is you have a couple, and this couple in South Africa have an animal preserve for damaged and rescued animals from circuses and exotic pets where the animals have been abused and neglected. And they have this large sanctuary where they give them love and attention and free roam, and they're able to live in harmony and live out their lives. And you see the couple, you know, bonding with these big cats. And the cats bonding with other types of cats, like a lion bonding with a cheetah, and a cheetah bonding with a cougar. Yeah, all these strange combinations that you normally wouldn't see in nature. And the animals feel safe. But then they get an animal in that's been extremely abused. And it's a very powerful cat, very secretive cat. It's the black leopard. And it stays in this little cave. It won't come out. For weeks, it won't come out. And when someone goes near it, it snarls. And when the owner tried to get close to it, it put him in the hospital, nearly killed him. So nothing they could do would help this animal. A psychologist who knew the couple said that she had heard of a woman who was like an animal whisperer. And could they bring her in? Well, they thought it was all nonsense. This is weird stuff. It's, you know, there is no such thing. So they were skeptical, but they invited the woman to come in. The woman came in, and the moment she approached the enclosure from the outside and just sat there quietly, the animal did not growl as he had been doing nonstop when anyone approached. He was very calm. And after spending some hours there, she went over to the couple and the psychologist and said, he doesn't like his name. He wants a different name, and he doesn't trust people. And you'll hear what she has to say. They thought she was nuts because they didn't hear anything, and she's doing all this with non-verbal communication. But what was found to happen was that after this woman told the panther, "We've given you a new name. It's a name of power." and its name of enlightenment. And, you know, and you have nothing to fear here. We're not going to ask you to do anything. You don't have to do anything. No performing. You're not going to be abused. You don't have to perform. Suddenly, the entire animal's body language and disposition changed. We're not talking about over weeks or months. We're talking about in hours. It changed. For the first time since he'd been there, the animal came out of his enclosure and found the highest rock and went up and sat on it, like, here I am. I am the power. And no more biting, attacking, and was able to coexist with the other animals and with the people. Now, why am I playing this for you? Because don't take this to be a Black Panther in Africa. What about your dog, your cat, your bird, your horse? What about all those wonderful sentient creatures that when you look at them, they know what you're thinking. They know how you feel. As one of the people in this audience said to me, she said, Gary, I was going through a really rough time emotionally and physically. And one day I came in and I just sat on the couch and I thought, oh, God, my life's a mess. And a little brown miniature Dachshund came over and came up on to her lap and just looked at her and wouldn't leave her. Wherever she went, that little Dachshund went. And when she finally went to bed, the Dachshund, who has never slept on her bed, pulled himself up on the bed, biting the covers until she finally lifted him up, and he laid there on her heart, she said. How did that animal know that she was in such deep distress that she needed that bonding? And how many times when we've needed someone to be there, we've had a dog or cat or whatever our companion is, animal, who's always there for us? And how many times have you communicated, even non-verbally, and you knew that you were, that what they were thinking, what they were saying? So for those of you who also have that deep empathy and that high sensitivity of intuition, you've probably been communicating a lot without even being aware of it. But this is just an example of how powerful this is. So I gave you the visual backdrop for this audio clip.
Even after everything that I've experienced with Anna and spending all that time with her, there's that scientific control, you know, sort of rational part of my brain still has doubts. So I wonder what it will take to totally convince me.
And then a unique opportunity presented itself. In the course of my work, I had come across the story of Jörg Olsen, an ex-policeman turned conservationist. Jörg and his wife Karin set up the Jukani Predator Park. Here, many big cats rescued from bad zoos and canned hunting farms are offered a home and get lifetime care. Jörg has a remarkable relationship with his cats and he handles them in a way I have seldom seen before. Did not know what to do with. This black leopard, called Diablo, had been rescued from a European zoo where he'd been abused. That experience had made him suspicious and vicious. All he did was sit in his night shelter and snarl at anyone who came close to him. 6 months in, and Jörg was at a loss as to how to deal with this cat.
That whole atmosphere there was a vibe of aggression and of I hate you and I will kill you. And, you know, the one encounter I had with him, he sent me to hospital one bite, 1 week.
Here, I thought, was the perfect case. If Anna could get this animal to change his behavior and become well-adjusted, then I would have no choice but to acknowledge that she was in dialogue with animals. It took me some time, however, to convince Jörg to bring in Anna.
He's a dangerous cat. He's very, very dangerous. He's towards me and towards everybody else. My opinion, the chances of an animal communicator changing that, it'll take a lot to convince me. I honestly do not believe that an animal can talk to a human or communicate with a human. I've had animals my whole life. We give them commands, we give them instructions, and they do it as we habituate them, basically. But I'm very skeptical to think that an animal like Diablo will communicate or can communicate with humans. I am desperate, however. I do not want to lose him.
I made sure that Anna had no information on Diablo or his history before she came to speak to the Black Leopard. I was nervous to see what would happen, as this animal never let anyone near his night shelter without a lot of snarling and growling. But the minute he saw Anna, he calmed down and let her kneel right outside and look at him.
This beautiful black leopard that you asked us to communicate with is very overawed by his new surroundings, having come from a very cramped and stressful place for him. But this place has been provided for him, but he's been quite conditioned by a very unfortunate past. He doesn't want much to do with humans as a result. He's immensely powerful, and I mean not just physically, which you well know and respect, but he's immensely powerful with a wisdom and an energetic presence and personality that is far bigger than anyone has ever appreciated about him before. And he commands a certain amount of respect for that. Again, not in a needy way, but really just out of, by virtue of who he is as a being. There's a very particular thing about his name, Diablo. He wants that name changed because he doesn't like the associations with it, the blackness, the darkness, the diabolical. And when asking him about his past before coming here, he shows concern for two young cubs that were next to him. He's asking what happened to them with a great sense of care and concern.
We actually forgot about that. When we went to fetch him, there was so much excitement about bringing him back here. It actually slipped my mind until she said, he asked about the two cubs. And then we've remembered there were two little young leopard cubs next door to him that came from Rustenburg, and they were sort of semi-wild. They weren't hand-reared. And it just slipped my mind. And when they talked about it, I couldn't believe, I actually did believe it. I mean, then I really believed that they were communicating.
And she communicated with him, and when we spoke to her and she relayed all the information back to us, firstly, I didn't believe her. You know, it's things that anybody can think out, and you can think, you know. And then she said something about the cubs that were with him. And that changed this whole thing, because now all of a sudden, you know, that's something that she didn't know about.
And I've also reassured him that you have no demands of him here, that you're quite happy to not make any physical demands of him or any expectations for display or interaction, that you're really willing to let him be how he wants to be. And that's given him an enormous sense of relief. Yeah. And having told him that, it's for the first time made him actually genuinely interested in now exploring a bit further. Now that he feels that he's not being asked to come out more, he's genuinely interested in being relaxed enough to have a natural curiosity come out and to actually expand his horizons a bit.
Pierre was just stunned when the black leopard walked out of his night shelter into the larger enclosure later in the afternoon. In the 6 months that the cat had been here, Pierre had never seen him out of the night shelter. He then decided to rename the leopard Spirit.
We told him that same afternoon that we're not going to call him Diablo anymore. And we understand and we agree with that the diabolical side of it. That's not what he is to us. And we'd like to change his name to Spirit. As I walked to him, I thought, listen, he asked about the two young leopards. And I thought, well, I'm here now. There's nobody else here. I'm not going to look like a fool if he ignores me. I'll tell him what happened to those leopards. And as I called him and I said, Spirit, and he was looking at me, he was lying like that. I said, with regard to the two little leopards, I just want to assure you and I want to tell you that they're safe. And I couldn't help it. I just said to him, wow, you're beautiful.
Beautiful. Oh, that's mooi. That's mooi.
And he gave me that, oh. And I thought, what's happening here? And I said to him, you understand what I'm telling you if I say to you that you're the most stunning cat?
Oh.
And I spoke to him and he answered me about 19 times. And he just sat there and he was totally relaxed. It's the first time. It's the first time since we had him that I felt at ease with him. I felt that he was relaxed and he understood me. It was, to say that, I don't know what it feels like for him. For me, it was the most amazing moment.
Later that afternoon, Anna came back to check up on Spirit and to see how he was doing.
I'm asking him now about how he experienced the communication from Jörg through the fence. And he said it's the first time that someone has directly expressed to him verbally appreciation for who he really is, not how they see him to be. And that really surprised him. He shows me an image of literally stopping in his tracks by surprise at that sense of just this wall of appreciation coming towards him. He is so relieved that nothing's being demanded of him here. He's just so relieved. It's like this weight is lifted from his shoulders. And when he was grunting back, he said he was saying thank you for the thank yous. So each thank you he was getting, he was saying thank you back. Is there anything you'd like to say about that feedback?
I think we'll talk about this a bit later. I can't believe this. So, we'll talk about this later. It's unbelievable. I'm overwhelmed. It's two different animals. It's two totally, totally different personalities. We had a snarling cat, angry at everything, upset about being here, hating humans, hating us for having him here, ready to kill in an instant. To this relaxed black leopard that's lying on top of his log in his shelter is this attitude of you recognize me for who I am now. And it's amazing to talk to him and get the talking and get him to talk back to us.
Jörg and Karin attended Anna's workshop on animal communication and now use it regularly with all their animals.
It changed my whole life. And Spirit and animal communication has taught me, you know, when I work with my other lions, the reactions you get, the communication you get back, the feelings you get. Sometimes you get lions, well, Queenie, for instance, that's unhappy with something that happened. And I'm not sitting out there wondering what's wrong with her. She tells me. and I can correct it, and I can make her happy because she is in my...
I just found that very interesting because my older brother Howard was an animal whisperer. I saw Howard do some wonderful and completely scientifically unexplainable things. We had a giant herd of buffalo from an animal preserve that had closed, and these were not tamed. These were not handleable. And yet when they got off the trailers and they were put into this 10-acre pasture, and they all went to the center of the pasture, there were about, I think, 47 of them, my brother just walked right out and stood in front of the big alpha male bull and just stood there for about an hour. And he said he was communicating with that alpha male, and he petted its head. Now, this was a big 1,400-pound animal that had never been approached, never been touched. And there's Howard, and he could do this with any animal. I watched him do it. He had this skill his whole life, this gift. I'm sure many of you have that skill with the animals that you have in your life. We're going to finish our program today as a prelude to tomorrow's program. Tomorrow's entire program is on artificial intelligence and what I believe are its dangers and the fact that it cannot be stopped. But I want to introduce Anonymous because they're giving clips from pro artificial intelligence and pro robotic people that the media praises. And they're just giving us bits and pieces. And so it's not the most coherent piece to listen to if you're not watching it, but at least you'll get some ideas of what these people believe in and what challenges need to be made. So this is Anonymous. Please listen in.
You know, and it's me, it's Mark, it's the, you know, Kevin Systrom at Instagram, it's all of these people understood this consciously. And we did it anyway.
That culture is missing here. So part of what we're trying to do to achieve those goals is like take really big, audacious points of view on the world and then train ourselves to be patient. And it's really, really hard. The entire society is set up to not be patient anymore. Consumer internet businesses are about exploiting psychology. And that is one where you want to fail fast because you know, people are unpredictable, and so we want to psychologically figure out how to manipulate you as fast as possible and then give you back that dopamine hit. We did that brilliantly at Facebook. Instagram has done it. WhatsApp has done it. You know, Snapchat has done it. Twitter has done it. So there are great examples. WeChat is doing it. There are great examples of failing fast is the right path to exploiting psychology of mass populations of people. I feel tremendous guilt. I think we all knew in the back of our minds, even though we feigned this whole line of like, there probably aren't any really bad unintended consequences. I think in the back, deep, deep recesses of our minds, we kind of knew something bad could happen. But I think the way we defined it was not like this.
Turn it off. That's what I would say. It's hard for young people now because they're hooked. They're addicted. If you don't think you're addicted, and I'm talking about anyone, from the highest to the lowest, if you don't think you're addicted, then see if you can turn it off for a week. It got quiet in here, didn't it? Didn't it get real quiet? It's a tool, so we should use it. God has blessed us with free will. Now it's free will magnified, free will on steroids. You're free to go in any direction you want. It will allow you, and it's not the enemy. It's just a reflection of our own free will. You know? And we all want to be liked, but now we want to be liked by 16 million. And will now some of us do anything to be liked? We used to do anything to be liked, but it was by the person in front of you. Now it's to be liked by 16 million people that you don't know. We have to ask ourselves, what is the long-term, if not the short-term effect of too much information?
So the context was I was at Stanford and the dean asked me to speak to the MBA students. And in it, what I was talking about was The question was, you know, what do you think the long-term effects of social media in general are? And unfortunately, what happened was, I think it's easy to characterize what I said just as a Facebook-specific thing because I worked there and I was a key part of growing it. The reality of what
well,
I was...
Explain what you said at the time
about
Facebook.
So what I said was, I think the tools that have been created today are starting to erode the social fabric of how society works. And what I meant by that is the following thing. Today we live in a world now where it is easy to confuse truth and popularity. And you can use money to amplify whatever you believe and get people to believe that what is popular is now truthful and what is not popular may not be truthful. You know, Joe and I, for example, we've been on the other side of climate for a long time, right?
Right.
And the reality is now I can take money and I can use that through all of these social media systems that exist to hundreds of millions of people, and I can convince all of Joe's friends and everybody like him of my opinion in very subtle and small ways. And he can do the same to me. We can do that about vaccines. We can do that about gay rights. We can do that about bathroom laws. We can do that about Roy Moore. And so I think the question we have to ask ourselves is, how do we live in a world where this is now possible? And
so it was about that, but just so I understand, was it, because I read and watched parts of what you were talking about. Part of it seemed to me about the ability to pay to manipulate people's thoughts. The other seemed to me to be this sort of ADD society with which the sort of liking everything else has created this sort of feedback loop that you compared to drugs.
We know for a fact that what all of these systems do, every single one, is it exploits our own natural tendencies in human beings to get and want feedback. And that feedback, chemically speaking, is the release of dopamine in your brain. And so what these feedback loops do, and they exist everywhere, in Call of Duty, in other video games, in social networking sites, they get you to react.
When Facebook was getting going, I had these people who would come up to me and they would say, you know, I'm not on social media. And I would say, okay, you know, you will be. And then they would say, no, I value my real life interactions, I value the moment, I value presence, and I value intimacy. And I would say, well, you're a conscientious objector, that's okay. You don't have to participate, but you know, we'll get you eventually. and like, I don't know if I really understood the consequences of what I was saying. Because the unintended consequences of a network when it grows to 1 billion or 2 billion people, and it literally changes your relationship with society, with each other, with it probably interferes with productivity in weird ways. It, God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. You know, if the thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them to really understand it, that thought process was all about, how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible? And that means that we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. And that's gonna get you to contribute more content, and that's gonna get you, you know, more likes and comments. I mean, it's a social validation feedback loop that it's like a, I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with, because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology.
It literally is a point now where I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. That is truly where we are. And I would encourage all of you, as the future leaders of the world, to really internalize how important this is. If you feed the beast, that beast will destroy you. If you push back on it, we have a chance to control it and rein it in. And it is a point in time where people need to hard break from some of these tools and the things that you rely on. The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth. And it's not an American problem. This is not about Russian ads. This is a global problem. So we're in a really bad state of affairs right now, in my opinion. It is eroding the core foundations of how people behave.
Now, tomorrow, we have an entire program on artificial intelligence. You will not want to miss it. I look forward to sharing it at that time with a deep commentary that I've written on this. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.